Secret friends, unite!
Welcome to the Secret Friends Unite podcast, episode 466. This is your guide to the geek side, and I am one of your hosts, Todd Oxtra, joined by the churlish Charlie Carden.
Execute order 66.
Thanks. I'll take my Oscar now for my Ian McDermott impersonation. Good afternoon, friends. How are you?
I believe 466 is the combo of cheese.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Oh, so if they would have added combo, if they would have added cheese to order 66, what would that have sounded like? Would they, the clones have just like fired cheese at the clones and maybe, or the Jedi, and maybe only the ones who are lactose intolerant would have suffered. The others would have lived. How would that have shaped galactic events differently? I don't know.
Maybe that was to start up a new franchise, like a burger franchise, like In-N-Out, or maybe Star Burgers.
Jedi Burger, good Jedi Burger, and they could have Kenan and Kel in there as well. That would have been fantastic. But yes, we are here. We are resolute to talk about delightful thing. And yeah, but first and foremost, before we do anything else, I know, isn't that great? We'd like to pay homage to the delightful people on our Secret Friends Unite Patreon squad over at patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite. Now with no ads on YouTube podcast. Is that what you meant to say by that? Is YT YouTube, or is that like the young and the
correct?
Rest
of it is. So you get no ads if you're a Patreon, but our show is also now on YouTube podcasts.
Oh, that's right. I remember. But anyway, what we do like to do in regards to the Patreon is pay homage to these wonderful folks who make it possible for us to do what we do. Todd and I have a great comic book related show called Spinner Rack, of which I've been absent, but we're coming back with something new at you next week. And then I've got a great show called The Facts of Geek Life, where I'm joined by a guest. We break down a season of a classic show, a couple of episodes, and have a rockin' good time. You can try the programs out for free for 7 days by once again visiting patreon.com/secretfriendsunite. But over on our Friends with Benefits tier, John Sedorf, the Phoenix Sisters cosplay, Brendan Myers, Corey in HD, and longtime friend of the show, Matthew Keel, are supporting us over there. On the BFFs tier, we have the awesome Nias family of the Twin Cities, Sean, Stella, and Henry, and friend of the show, Missy Merchant. So thank you all, and thank you all who subscribe. Again, please visit Patreon.com/Secret Friends Unite. Try us out for 7 days. And if you like what you hear, stick around. Like Arnie with the big knife. Thunk. Stick around.
Yes. And we are doing a little something with a show I previously launched called Fansplaining. We also had the personnel file. So we're essentially repositioning that into a show called Spotlight, where it's essentially either interviews or a specific franchise or something. It's basically a spotlight on those things. So we did one with the folks from the Uncanny Experience, which is a big X-Men experience that was on Patreon. I just put that out to share broadly. Great interview with that team. A lot of fun. And we are hoping to do more of those interviews and special segment shows in the future. I've got a couple in my mind that I'm planning to do. So this should be a lot of fun.
He's got it in his mind. Oh, but what I've got on my mind is the timelessness of this week's cover. July of 1992. Oh, the summer of 92. I remember I had my first job. My first job, I worked at a water park that no longer exists here in the Grand Rapids area called Splash. They were a client. My mom sold advertisements, a client of hers. And I was on maintenance. I plunged toilets for a summer. Talk about keeping it real.
Let's see, 92. That would have been the last, that would have been my junior summer.
Yep.
I was probably working at the IGA in Metamora.
Nice.
You could say IGA stood for many things. I won't say what I always said that it stood for. But yeah, great time probably going to a lot of concerts that summer, having fun, driving probably that one was the Cutlass Sierra that was a piece of crap.
Ooh, that was before the Tato.
Before the Tato. Yeah, that car gas tank leaked. And I remember I told Gabe Vario, hey, listen to my car. It purrs like a kitten. revved it up and it died. So it became the kitten.
It purrs like a dead kitten. Remember my, exactly. And this wasn't then, but speaking of car stories, you were there for this one. The first car I ever paid my own money for was that Volkswagen GT, the silver one that the gas tank backed up. And so the gas, yes. Don't you remember the gas leaked out the gas cap? Oh, good times. Early cars. But anyway, back in 1992, issue 66 of DC Comics' current ongoing Flash series starts off with above the Flash, is above the slash, the race you demanded, Flash versus Aquaman. And you see Flash himself with a bubble beneath that says, warning, this scene does not appear in this issue. Well, that's really kind of counterintuitive to do that. But anyway, you have Flash with his ready to start running, standing on a start line, and to his side is Aquaman in his classic outfit, but with a mullet, with his arms crossed in a buffalo stance, saying, dot, 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 not. So if anyone who lived back in the day remembers that in the summer of 1992, we were treated to the smash hit film Wayne's World, adapted from the wildly popular sketch on Saturday Night Live, for which one of their many catchphrases was to say something facetious and then end it with the expression, not. So,
oh, yeah, that's great.
A capsule in time. And again, written by Mark Waid, who is otherwise a fantastic creator, but he did not pen this cover, I'm assuming.
No, it would have been, I think, Tom Collins, I believe.
Ooh, a Tom Collins. Sounds
great. Collins.
What's in a Tom Collins again? It's vodka, right?
I'm assuming gin and something else.
Oh, I stay away from gin. That's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Flash, the whole thing about the Flash is everyone wants to race him because, he's the fastest man alive and he's raced everybody that's, fast. And this one, it's Aquaman, of course. So that's why it's kind of funny. The race you demanded, not. So there we go. Yeah.
I read one of these quick sidebar. I read one of these clickbait articles that were like things and cartoons that you didn't pick up on as kids. And it was from the Justice League Unlimited, that one from the early 2000s. And the Flash says, blah, 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 blah. He's standing next to, I believe it is Hot Girl. He's like, but I'm the fastest man alive. And her reply is, that must be why you don't get many dates.
Oh yeah.
Ouch,
so Mark Waid did a great run on the Flash. It's probably the most notable run of Flash because I don't think there was a great 90s. Creative team on Flash, but Mark Waid really brought Flash back into prominence, really introduced
back.
The Rogues Gallery became a thing. Ooh. And yeah, it was really cool. Great. He also then teamed up with Mark Waringo.
Ringo, yeah. John Paul George Ringo?
No, Waringo, Mike Waringo, sorry.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
He passed away, but he was a great artist too on The Flash. So,
yeah.
Yeah, nice. Great. This was before we got Zero Hour, where we got another, like the crises became a regular occurrence.
Crisis,
this is really like DC kind of figuring they probably needed to, move these characters in a new direction. So it was pretty much
have some stability.
Rinse and repeat. At the time,
I totally get it. Well, speaking of rinse and repeat, that would be the segue I'm going to use where I pay more homage to our senior news correspondent, the gal who's been with us damn near from the start, but was around a whole lot longer than that at 124 years young, down at the corner of Hollywood and Vine. That would be Madam Webb. She's got our latest news and scoops. So let's go for it.
Now it's time for Madam Webb's rumors and news. Take it away, boys.
Thank you, Madam Webb. Oh, my goodness. March Madness is upon us. We're going to have Michigan State's vying to get into the tournament. And Madam Webb, you are called upon to give your sports knowledge and your interpretation of basketball. So get your uniform ready. The peach basket is up. And if they are ready, Michigan State needs a new player, they will call you in because I think you're still eligible because you only did 3 years at Michigan State and then you decided to overseas.
Yeah, that's when she joined the Merchant Marine, right? Or the WAX. One of the two. Probably both. Double duty. It's wild.
Correct.
Well, speaking of wild, and we were talking about this in the pre-roll, we have a trailer finally for the summer release of the reboot of The Crow, which was a film famously mired in controversy because of the death of the star, the accidental death of the star during the production of the film, and something that we discussed on a segment probably almost 2 years ago, the Does It Hold Up? Because the original film came out, it was an indie film that came out in the mid-1990s, 1994, was set in my hometown of Detroit, Michigan, though I'm sure filmed in, where somewhere else discussing, Philadelphia, probably. we started watching The Wire this week. Holy crap. Yikes. And, you know, that was 20 years ago. What does it look like now? I don't know. I'm sure, you know what, if you live in Baltimore and I'm putting down your hometown, I apologize. Feel free to hit me up on Threads, C3 Carpenter.
You mean Crackmore? Yeah.
Or you can hit Todd up since he's being even more rude about it. So anyway, Todd, impressions. We talked in the B-roll. You said, hey, you know, I think The Crow is fine, the old one for where it came from. But now they're swinging in the same lens. Obviously, they've got the same concept. You have a guy who watches his girlfriend get murdered and he dies as well. And then he's, you know, necromanced up into this, you know, super killer and yada, yada, yada. And he's going for a rent, so on and so forth. And this trailer seems to go to illustrate those elements of it. But then again, kind of maybe some other stuff as well. So take it away.
Yeah. So a little primer on this. Yeah, the movie's 30 years old. Alex Proyas directed it. Very famous soundtrack, kind of blended together. And Alex Proyas was a music video director.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it felt like a music video. And that's right. The way it was. Very low CG. So essentially you got a lot of like fisticuffs and stuff like that. And a lot of mood, the way it was. Very 90s, early 90s film. I really enjoyed it. I still think it's first time because of the low CGI and things like that. Not too bad. It's based on a series of comic books called The Crow by James O'Barr. And the whole thing is The Crow isn't just one person. The Crow is essentially what takes spirits to heaven. And The Crow essentially gives people who have unfinished work or have been wronged or something like that a second chance, and they come back to right the wrong. So
so it's like a noir Quantum Leap but with guns,
kind of. Yeah It's kind of like a mythology in a way, and the whole thing about the crow is you're essentially immortal. You can't die and take tons of bullets as long as a crow, the actual crow who is following the main character around, doesn't die. So essentially,
somebody could be like, hey, Todd, I'm going to get you. Pew, shoot the crow.
Exactly.
And then drop it.
Exactly.
Wow.
So
that is a dangerous vulnerability that you wouldn't want people to know about, because you wouldn't get more than 5 feet.
You're telling anybody, hey, by the way, don't kill my crow.
Don't look at that crow. He's going to hang back there. He's smoking a cigarette.
Exactly.
Just
hey, I'm Superman. Please don't bring kryptonite around me. I don't think he's dropping that anytime. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a bad vulnerability, no doubt. Ooh.
Yeah. So there's been three other Crow films since the original Crow City of Angels, The Crow Salvation, and Crow Wicked Prayer, with different people in them. Right. So this isn't the first time, but essentially they are now rebooting, remaking the original book with Eric Draven as the main character, his girlfriend. And we're getting Bill Skarsgård playing that role.
Skarsgård!
FKA Twigs playing his girlfriend who dies in this. Rupert Sanders is the director. Quite honestly, you would not be excited about any of the projects he's produced or directed.
Well, let's have it. Give us a couple.
Let's see, I'd have to look it up really quick, unless you want to do that.
No, it's not in this article.
No, it's not in this article. They probably made sure not to include it because you'd probably like buy him. Not a great director. We also have the person that stood out in this film really got me interested in was Danny Houston. Danny Houston played Wayne Stryker. He also played a really great vampire in 30 Days a Night. I really like him. So the cast to me is solid in this. The sad point is I just don't think this is going to be very notable.
FKA Twigs. I watched this trailer and I watched it just now. And again, I would love to know more about FKA Twigs and what the hell is that supposed to mean. But you know what?
She's a musician and things like that. She was dating.
And again,
what's his name? The guy who was in Transformers. The young guy. I can't remember his name.
Marky Mark.
Oh, no.
Which Transformers?
Shia LaBeouf. She was dating Shia LaBeouf, and Shia LaBeouf came out a little.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that
But he, Rupert Sanders directed Snow White and the Huntsman, that movie with Chris Hemsworth and Kristen Stewart. Then he did Ghost in the Shell, which, you know, got a lot of outcry because they basically whitewashed the role to put Charlize Theron in that. I believe that she was the main actress in that. And then Crow. So he hasn't done a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Skarsgård is that he's obviously he was Pennywise the Clown in the It films, and he's done a lot of really he did Hemlock Grove, which was on Netflix. That was a show we enjoyed. But yeah, this trailer makes us look like complete trash. I'm sorry, I can't pick a defensible position. It just, again, I'm with you. You know, when that original came out, you know, it was when we were in high school, college, and it was very edgy and it was very topical and was cut like a music video. And this seems to have a lot of that same sensibilities with the music and the quick cuts. But even, I mean, it was a Red Band trailer we watched, so it was violent. Guy gets his head blown off by a shotgun. That's delightful. That's just not something I'm dying to see, no pun intended. But yeah, the cuts of it just look ridiculous. And he, you know, he looks like Machine Gun Kelly, or who's the guy with all the Post Malone, the guy with all the tattoos on his face. Maybe that really works for Gen Z. Maybe this can be a Gen Z hit. I have no idea. This comes out June 7th.
Yeah, less goth, a little bit more of that.
A little bit more gross. Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing of today versus goth was a thing of then at that time.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's reflecting kind of like modern time sensibilities. It's not for everybody. We're old, Charlie. Yeah. So we have no, like, why doesn't that young man cut his hair? Because who's going to hire him? Right.
I mean, I stand pretty firmly on people with tattoos on their face as far as it being a liability for the hiring employment process. But you know what? That's just me. I'm sorry.
Mistakes are made. Yeah. This movie, I would say I think the biggest thing will be it looks very generic. It doesn't invoke any like exciting tone. It doesn't feel like this guy really, the director has that. He seems like more of a shooter than he does a visionary.
Yes, he does a vision board. I predict this
to be very mediocre. Not horrible, like, oh my God, you know, you see the scaffolding in the background and the camera. Yeah. I think it'll be mediocre.
Right. That's
probably the best way it is, you know.
June 7th. So Todd, this comes out during the time frame of our summer movie wager, which we're gonna have to start focusing on, the wager that you, John, and I have done since 2016. I don't think that this will be a factor because are the Gen Z kids gonna crank out to see this one? I think this is without a doubt 50 to 60 range, probably tops.
I have no clue how much this is going to cost to make either. And there's no notable stars in this. I mean, there's the B-tier people. So I think this one is what it is and will probably pass without anybody remembering it actually even happened.
Correct, Amundo. All right, moving on. You got kind of a 1-2 punch. Now we're going to be talking about the X-Men a little bit later as we get into the Thunderdome. But you've got some X-Men comic news. Now, Todd, I know you've had your struggles in the last 3 or 4 years with the X-Men stuff and the Krakoa storyline and the this and the what the hell was the ball? I was going to say the Hellgate ball. The Hellfire.
It was the Hellfire Gala.
There you go. So where do you land with all this X-Men stuff? Are you reading right now or before we get into this? Like, where are you at?
Not really. I mean, I like the premise of basically the X-Men went through X-Men throughout time have gone through like eras with different creators. They've done that's part of their thing.
Yeah, right. Like Spider-Man or like any heritage, anything.
Well, I mean, they completely bring in new mutants. They do all these different things. They have like something that changes the status quo big time. And because the X-Men are a team, it's very hard to self-contain it. And everybody has their own favorite X-Men. So it's a little bit different. So X-Men did the Krakoa, which was a huge change in strategy.
Bigly.
Krakoa was the living mutant island, and essentially it allowed Professor Xavier to catalog every mutant's brain waves and their consciousness, and Krakoa was able to then essentially clone every mutant. So mutants couldn't die anymore. So it was like, this is crazy.
As long as they made it back to base when they were crippled or whatever, they could just be
Nope, they didn't have to even come back.
So you would just plug in before you, like, I'm going on a mission, so I'm going to do my thumb scan, and then it'll update me. And
Well, yeah, Professor Xavier was consistently scanning all of them to get the most recent version of their psyche and things like that. Krakoa would grow that, and they had genetic material, they would grow it. And then, so that was a thing where essentially it became almost like gods among us because they can't die. So this became a weird thing.
Right.
Krakoa was their own nation. They went to a new planet, actually, and seeded the planet like Project Genesis. So I think it was Mars. And then there was a race of like aliens that were hidden on the planet. So it was crazy. Like I said, Charlie, this was like a weird status quo change.
That's a big change.
You had the Council of Mutants who basically decided what would happen. Like you had like Mr. Sinister on it, like Magneto. So enemies and friends. So it was definitely a weird take, and it was creating a lot of tension between mutants and humans because where were they at? And the mutants wanted a seat at the table in ruling and being treated like an entity in a nation, which they've always wanted to be treated fairly. So that's where we're at with it. And because of that, there's some things behind the scenes which made it not as nice as you thought it was. And it's all coming to a head. We knew this was going to happen. Something was going on with Xavier. Like he wasn't on the up and up. He's been wearing this helmet. So we're now getting the next phase of X-Men. It's called it's basically From the Ashes. We're getting this a new beginning. It's
good. Which obviously paints a picture that everything went to shit and they're starting over. Okay.
Happen this summer. It's going to be a big event. It's going to kick off with titles. There was a nice comic book trailer, which I always like, where basically it's motion comics.
Which it gets the point across. I find them kind of annoying, but I thought that this was cool. So this comic trailer was Jubilee was the featured character, and it was maybe 60 seconds. And she's like, and it says after the fall of everything, and she's standing outside, the X-Men compound, and it's all locked down. The security running around, and she wanders off into the real world, and you see she's taking a job washing dishes. And I like the little symbol. So boom, you make this symbol to somebody else. Yeah. It means, and it illustrates. So this dishwasher, she's sitting eating in a diner.
Yeah, me and Charlie are flashing gang signals, symbols. Watching this,
It's Spider-Man's thing, but it's like this.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
that means mutant. So that's cool. So mutants are now back to being a subculture and still worked into obviously. So this, take place in America, whatever it is. So that's interesting. So now there are three core titles. There's Uncanny. There's X-Men. Adjectiveless, and then there's Exceptional X-Men, which is new, I think.
That's a new title, and that's going to be so. Each one of these has a little bit of a different flavor and different team, which is cool because then it's like you pick your favorite team and you go along with it. The X-Men book is kind of a weird one because it's mixing Cyclops, Beast, Magneto, Psylocke, Kid Omega, Temper, Magic, and Juggernaut.
Juggernaut.
This kind of reminds me of Uncanny X-Force, and more like hardcore. Then we have the Uncanny X-Men, which is kind of like the X-Men 97 team.
It's exactly that. Yeah, pretty much, except Cyclops,
which is Rogue, Gambit, Nightcrawler, Jubilee, and Wolverine, and Rogue is leading that team. And then Exceptional is essentially New Mutants. It's going to have Emma Frost and Kitty Pryde essentially raising the next generation of mutants.
Is that Wolfsbane in there as well? I'm just looking at the picture.
That is going to have. How do they even list who all the students is?
No!
Here is Bronze, Axo, Melee.
New characters. Good. Well, new characters. New to me, anyway. They might not be new.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Okay, so the real jam of this. Obviously, we've got the news out. Those are all the particulars. Is this bringing Todd Oxford back to reading a book?
I think so, because I've always said, what's a good point to get in, and I want a good book. So what I will probably do is pick up all three of the just the first title and see what gets me, if I like the writing or the art. Gail Simone is writing Uncanny, and I think Gail Simone's a fantastic. They've got good creators on this, so I think that's the good note.
And Uncanny is going to be your more traditional lineup with Wolverine and Rogue and all that stuff. So, well, cool. Well, so you'll buy, potentially you pick that up. Perhaps we'll break the first issue down together. You share it with me and I can do that as well. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, good.
There is, there's going to be six other books that are going to launch later. So, but these look to be different because we've got X-Factor, which is a heritage book. You know, that was the first official spinoff of X-Men. Well, third, because New Mutants. But X-Factor was a fun team of the, like, almost like the original X-Men. We have X-Force, which was Cable's team that came out of New Mutants. Right. NYX was kind of a cool street-wise book that brought up. So that was kind of a neat kind of a down you know street level mutant book that was kind of neat finding mutants that were kind of there. Phoenix, which could be Jean Grey, could be Rachel Summers. Storm, which I don't think Storm's ever have an ongoing solo book. She's had miniseries, and then Wolverine has always had his own book, so that'll be it. So these aren't too bad, and you just pick up the book you want and enjoy those. But I want to find a core book I can keep up with.
So you probably read each of the number ones and then pick. Is that your plan?
Yeah, see what appeals to me. Yeah.
Okay. I'll give it a shot. Well, cool. That's I like that. So, all right, moving on. And I feel like we talked about this a while back, but now we have gameplay for G.I. Joe, The Wrath of Cobra, which is stylized off of your very classic 1980s G.I. Joe cartoon. I'm looking right at it, but I can't get up and pick it up. But I just today, my friend Derek, he's my hookup at Hasbro Pulse because he's got their Prime membership. So whenever they have an exclusive item, so I don't have to pay shipping, I just have him buy it for me. But he brought by the Vamp, which I dropped a picture of it on our Discord in our collectibles thread. Absolutely beautiful toy. Which the Vamp was one of their original vehicles. So I was pretty psyched about that. But yeah, this gameplay looks wild. Now, this is a PC game. I'm like, please let me be able to play this on my phone.
It's going to be on consoles. I don't know. I'd have to look to see if it's coming to PS4 or not for you, Charlie. Okay. But it will be online, too. So it's PS4 and PS5, we could play together online.
Okay.
It's basically a four-player beat 'em up, kind of like the old Simpsons game.
I love it. Yeah, I'm down with that. And it was funny, I've actually turned my PlayStation 4 back on recently because I hadn't played that Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga in a couple of years. And I thought, I'll go back and give it a stab. I just finished it yesterday, just playing through the story modes. But I love that. And I could find a way to love this because, again, even – whoops. Okay, stop. Sorry. Yeah. I pushed
the button. Are you okay?
No, I just apparently when I pushed it, it started playing and blasting my earballs out. But
good for you.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, this is actually dated on my birthday. So, okay. I had to close it because it wouldn't stop playing the audio. But I'll pull it from my memory. No, it looks great. I see, you know, classic characters from the first five, you know, kind of years of G.I. Joe, which is my sweet spot. The 82 through the 85 series is the series that I like. And that was very integral to the cartoon series and the mini series that ran it up. But yeah, I like the beat 'em up. The style looks very Sega Genesis, you know, like the old Spider-Man games or that they had back in the day, you know, like, the Carnage, the Spider-Man Carnage.
Maximum Carnage.
Maximum Carnage. My God, right on the tip of my tongue. But yeah, this is fantastic. But yeah, even the rundown. So, you know, yeah, your 80s, you've got, you know, Duke Scarlet Roblox and then, you know, Cobra Troopers and the Vipers and Crimson Guard. So that actually gets into the 86 series. But basically when the core comic was on. So I closed the window and don't want to open it again because I don't want it to blow my ears out. When does this drop?
Let's see. I believe it is. Right now, there's no firm release date. I'm guessing this will probably be a summer release. And I mean, it's really cool because they show some of the characters you fight are very iconic, like Major Blood, things like that. You can shoot or you can punch, which is fun. The other part that's kind of neat is I like that they're just taking it back to the basics. There's been a couple G.I. Joe games, nothing really iconic that have been great, but this one seems to be like capture the flavor of what's really good about G.I. Joe from our age. There was a recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles beat 'em up. That was kind of like a new game, but kind of reminded me of the old arcade game.
Yeah.
Really good. It was called Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this is like this. And, you know, typically games like this, if they get very popular, they'll bring out like an expansion pack, like you see with Legos, where, it's new characters brought in. Maybe Zartan gets brought in. Or maybe it's like, it's Quick Kick and, you know, somebody else.
Yeah. Quick Kick, such a practical outfit. He wears a sash of throwing stars and a pair of black pants and nothing else. And a headband. They're very practical for when you see him the first time. And then it was in, I think, the 85 miniseries, and it was him. And it was Quick Kick and Alpine, who were buddies. And then they were in the Arctic. And then there was Quick Kick, and he was wearing exactly what I just described. Sounds very practical for an Arctic mission, wearing no shoes. Good plan.
I do find it interesting because Ripcord is one of the playable characters. And to me, he's like one of the most characters I know the least about, because he really wasn't a main.
Two things about Ripcord is, number one, that was the Wayans brothers character in the 2009 G.I. Joe movie.
Oh, really?
He was Ripcord. Mm. But Ripcord ended up being a somewhat pivotal character in Larry Hama's Marvel Comics run. He had his own storyline. It had to do with this girl he was dating. The girl turned out to be, her dad was a Crimson Guardsman, but that's the whole thing about Crimson Guardsman is that you never know. And then, yeah, it got tied into a whole storyline that had to do with Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow and Zartan. And he was the one who discovered, because Zartan took him out, and then switched their clothes. And so the Dreadnoks took Ripcord back to Springfield. Then Ripcord escapes, calls the Joes, tells them where Springfield is. That's when Springfield got invaded. So it was Ripcord was responsible for that. So he was a big deal in the comics.
Is Cobra headquarters under Moe's Tavern?
It's under all of Springfield. Bo's Cavern. Yes. Yes. And when they finally caught Bart Simpson for making those prank calls, he was publicly executed. Oh, Bo's Cavern. But anyway, yeah. So no release date on that. So, well, when it does, we will play, because I'm
totally. Yeah, it should be around I think $30 game or less. Shouldn't be very expensive.
I can handle it. All right. What's up with the Teen Titans? I haven't been keeping up.
So Teen Titans are now going to be a live action movie coming from the actual writer of the Supergirl World of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a book we read for the Spinnerack. Yeah.
Yeah, no director yet, but it'll be interesting because we just came off of Titans, which I loved, but it was kind of ham-fisted, trying to be heavy and dark, but still, you know, I liked the characters, liked the storylines, I really enjoyed it, but it was definitely CW plus, I guess is the best way to put it, because it was R-rated, essentially.
CW, yeah. After there were some nudie balooties in there, yeah. So
a lot of effing and effing
is what flipping them and flippity flop. So this will be a live action film. So will this fall under my ad jammed? Thanks, ad. Will this fall under the banner of the what James Gunn's got going on?
Gods and Monsters.
Yeah. Because he's structuring some of his stuff to not all necessarily flow together. So I wonder, will this be part of like the Superman movie that we know is being made?
Part of it is going to be the Batman with Robert Pattinson.
The Batman.
And the other thing.
And then
The Joker, yeah. That stuff is considered Elseworlds. And then this will all be part of the DCEU or the Gods and Monsters universe, where everything is a world of DC, and they can either choose to connect or they don't have to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it will be interesting to see what shape the Titans take with this, because we've seen Cyborg, obviously, but we've only seen most of the Titans actually in the Titans live action series. They've been in maybe Smallville or things like that. Characters shown up. But with this one, I don't know which team they'll go with. Will they go with the original one, or they go more of the ones Teen Titans go with, Beast Boy and Starfire and Raven, and things like that? Yeah. Getting Robin. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I say those were what you described. I'm trying to, because I read, particularly when Titans came out, I read that like first issue, and your core team of Titans was largely what you described. It was like, wasn't it like Robin and Cyborg, and was it Raven? And then it was, or did Raven come later?
But no, Raven was part of that. If you think of like New Teen Titans, the George Perez run.
That's what I was thinking of.
I mean, the original Titans, though, if you go back to like when they first came out, like in the 50s or early
60s, there you go.
Troy was essentially Wonder Woman's sidekick. Flash, which was, you know, a young version of Flash. You had Speedy, which was, you know, Green Arrow's sidekick. You had Aqualad. Right.
Without heroin.
exactly. And then you had the new Teen Titans. So I don't know which way they'll go, but we do know we're getting a Robin in the Brave and the Bold Which is kind of cool. So I don't know if that, I mean, that'd be kind of neat that we have, you know, Robin have leading his own team, or it might be an older Robin, maybe like a Nightwing versus, because I think Brave and the Bold is actually going to have a Damian. So it would make sense to have Dick Grayson, an older Robin introduced, and then Damian.
Not even Nightwing in his jazzy 70s outfit with the big.
I love it.
That's good stuff. Yeah. All those
disco collar.
Exactly.
We're kicking.
Yeah. I was going to say, what a bitch it is to take that to the dry cleaners, I'm sure.
So we're seeing a lot of stuff in movies that, you know, we've been wanting to see. So this is really good. James Gunn is just pulling everything and say, hey, we're going to have fun.
Yeah, that's good, because isn't the movie supposed to be entertaining, not just glum and boring and all Snydery? All right. Well, this next thing that you pulled out, now this is not something I've heard about. So Seth Rogen produced an adaptation of 8 Billion Genies for Amazon MGM. Now, what is 8 Billion Genies? I've never heard of it.
Yeah, so it's a comic book. Actually, Mark talked about this one, that he picked this one up. It's a really cool premise. Charles Soule and Ryan Brown are the creators of 8 Billion Genies, which is an 8-issue limited series that Image published in 2022. Really? Essentially, the story summary is, if you had one wish, what would you wish for? Now, what if everyone else had one wish too? That's 8 billion genies. At exactly the same moment, everyone on Earth gets a genie and one wish. All hell breaks loose in a very entertaining way. And that's just the beginning. Buckle in for the wildest ride of your life. So this could be a lot of fun.
That sounds nuts. And yeah, you could go a lot of different directions with this. This could be like, oh, everybody wish, you know, all, you know, 40% of people wish for world peace. And then, you know, 60% of people, everybody wished for $1 million. And, you know, if everybody has $1 million, then, you know, the World Bank collapses.
You don't really have any money.
Yeah exactly. Oh, that sounds wild.
Nobody works. Oh, wait, they have to work.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, so Amazon has had the rights to this for a couple of years, and now Seth Rogen is going to be producing it. So I don't necessarily know that that means this is going to be a comedy of some kind, because he's done serious work as well.
Yeah, The Boys is not a comedy. I mean, it's kind of sadder. It's black comedy, I guess, the best way to say
that's
it.
That's right, because he's really tied in with that as well. So, yeah. It says...
This is good news. Rodney Rothman...
Yeah. Exactly.
Co-writing this Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So he wrote that. So that's good news, too.
Be doing the scripting, so it won't be low. So, well, that's cool. So this is going into production, you know, three years from now, we'll be seeing this. And when it says Amazon Studios, this is a program or a, oh, no, it's be a film. Okay, film adaptation.
Says it's a film, and MGM still puts movies out in the theater. So maybe Amazon will get into that game where it'll be in theaters first, and then it'll come to Prime so we can pay for ads.
Right. Oh, I love. Well, you know what? Whatever makes the wheel go round. And speaking of things that make the wheels go round, as we find our way out of the news, it's this great word from our sponsor.
Hey, Secret Friends Unite. Let me tell you about Zencastr. We use them for our show, and now they're supporting us. Zencastr is now the all-in-one solution making podcasting easy. It's the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content, all from one dashboard. Being a creator has never been easier. And we chose Zencastr because of the ease of use, high quality output, and it makes it super easy for our guests to come on. We had multiple solutions we tried before, and Zencastr has just been the best fit for us. Why Zencastr? It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sounds and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of Zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. Have you ever worried what you sound like? Zencastr's post-production process makes you sound buttery smooth. It automatically removes those ums and ahs in your recording. It removes those awkward pauses in conversation, too. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with the click of a button. So if you're interested in making an easy, high-quality podcast just with the click of a browser button, go to Zencastr.com/pricing and use my code SFU1. You'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Now back to the show.
Talk nerdy to me. talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting in the Geek Easy, cover band's playing, drinks are poured, and we are ready to get our nerd on. So, in the world of nerd, it's kind of a down week. Not a lot of stuff going on. Not a lot of big movies this week. Not a lot of big TV. They were kind of in the middle of everything. So, at this point, I did check in on Invincible Season 2. It's back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the second half of Season 2. They've dropped one new episode, so I watched that. Episode 5. It's kind of cool the way they broke up the season, because we are left with our hero pretty much at his nadir, and he essentially, I don't want to spoil too much for people back in, but essentially it doesn't get better for Mark. It seems like he just cannot catch a break. I mean, he goes from heartache to, you know, things are not going good. He finds out he essentially has a sibling by his dad that he you know, is kind of a surprise to him, because he's got a really tenuous relationship with dad, to say the least. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on. He's kind of reunited with the team, and it's still not going well. Every time they think they things are gonna, you know, turn a new leaf for the team, things go wrong. So it's, if you like Invincible, I think you'll be very happy, because I think the way they're telling more about the team members and they're adding depth, it's really cool.
Yeah,
totally approve of this. So if you're behind, go in, check it out. The episodes are about 40 minutes each, and they always have a stinger after the credits.
Yeah.
So end credits. So always check them out, and definitely enjoy that. But this led me to watch a one shot that they put out. It was called Adam Eve. So it was really a one episode story that had been released, I think, last year. I never watched it, but I went and watched now. Basically, it's her origin story, and it's all about her and how she came to be, and it's giving her backdrop. So I like this, because it's giving you something, but it doesn't have to be a whole series. It's just a one shot, one episode about a character, and you can check it out if you want, or you can totally ignore it. I like that. I would like to see them do that for every character, because I think it would be a lot of, they had a lot of layers to these characters, and I think it would give them, and they could even do villains too. They could do that kind of a, now, be a fun one shot.
The two of these are connected, I assume, because I don't know who Adam.
Yeah, Adam Eve is one of the characters is the character of the team. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But this is spun off of a comic. So is this adapting material from the comic, or don't you know?
It might be. It might have been covered in the comic, or there might have been a one-shot as well. But yeah, it's all part of the Invincible universe. And I think it's kind of cool that Amazon has been doing these, because we've had the Boys. We had that one animated series, which I thought was interesting and fun.
Yeah, I watched one or two of the babies, Laser Babies Day Out or whatever. Yeah, we did watch a couple of those. Like, holy cow, these are really gruesome. But no, that's awesome. But yeah, what's important, and again, I've not really stuck with Invincible. I watched a bit of it when we kicked it off. But what's pivotal in like my question, like, oh, did that adapt something from the comics? That matters less and less, because what they really, you know, their purpose in adapting something is twofold. Obviously, you want to snag some of that built-in audience, but you want to create something that, if there's buzz because it's good, you'll pick up people who don't read comics at all. So you'll get somebody who, so anything in this Adam Eve special will be new to them regardless, where you'll have that limited group to be like, yeah, you know, that's not really what happened, because really it was, you know, you're going to get that crowd. But moreover than not, the vast majority, you're going to get people, obviously, who are not, much like Halo, which we finally started watching again. You know, the first season, a lot of people were like, well, that's not, Master Chief wouldn't take off his helmet and you would see his butt, and da 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 da. Where I thought the show.
And not a lot of sex in the video game either.
Yeah. Oh, video game sex. Not interested. But, you know, just for somebody watching the show, you're like, oh, this is a cool show because there's a lot of action and blah, blah, and the storyline seems interesting. That's really what they need, not somebody who is like, you know, well, this is not exactly the same as this thing and that thing. Where The Last of Us, for example, we finally watched all those cutscenes, and that is very, very similar to what you see in the show, though they flesh it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's more of a direct adaptation with some caveats that play with the medium.
Yeah,
I would say Invincible is very similar to that. It takes the core tenets, but it's like, yep, you feel like it's doing what the medium does best and telling different story beats, maybe blowing some things up, reducing some things. Whereas I feel like Halo just said, it's completely different. it's Master Chief, and yeah, there's some story beats, but it's essentially not at all like it. So
and here's his butt. Enjoy.
Yeah. So it does feel like, well, maybe we can capture some people. We can get some other people. Hey, it's a video game where he spends most time shooting and killing and doesn't speak a lot. Is that a great thing for people to watch? Probably not. So we'll do some fillers and create some new characters.
Got to give him an apartment and a dog and maybe a wacky neighbor, or maybe he doesn't get along with his dad. Yeah. I don't know, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. You know, they got to dress up as women so they can live in an apartment.
Yes.
Bosom Buddies.
Bosom Buddies Halo. I love it. All right. Well, I touched upon very briefly that we started watching the latest show in the Walking Dead verse, which is the Ones Who Live. This is the conclusion of the now, 10 years within the time frame of when Rick Grimes, who was our driving character in the show, when he was written out, for lack of a better term, he kind of disappeared in the bridge explosion and he washed up on shore and trash dump Lady J just took him away to the CRM, the mystery shadow government that is run by Michigan native Terry O'Quinn, as a matter of fact, the actor. And those were the first couple of episodes, but we're on episode 4 right now. And we're getting to a point where, Rick and Michonne have broken loose, and it looks, they're in a position where they can make a run for it and not necessarily have to go back to the CRM, because the CRM doesn't, once they take you, you're with them for good. And if you escape, die. Aren't those
the people that make Salesforce CRM?
Yep, exactly. Very, very dangerous people. You know it as well as I do. But this fourth episode had to do with them debating. Rick was told that if he runs with Michonne, that the CRM will send out a force to wipe out all of Alexandria, which is their home and where their children live. And in this most recent episode, Michonne finally reveals, when Rick doesn't want to leave, she finally reveals to him that he has a son that he didn't know about, because in this previous episode's running up, she hadn't brought it up. But there's just a lot of really phenomenal, drama and just a lot of really a great back and forth. The Walking Dead, since it ended last year, has had two spinoffs, which I kind of sat through, but was not super enthusiastic about, like the one in New York, the Dead City with Negan and Maggie. The one with Daryl in France. I thought it was like okie doke. This, cuts to the heart of the show, Rick being the main character, and anybody who read the comics. And again, just kind of talking about comics versus show, and how they really expand things out. This doesn't touch anything that ever happened in any of the comics, because this was not the arc that happened with either one of these characters. But I think it's the franchise, some of the franchise's best stuff, up to including those last somewhat forgettable years of the original show. So I'm really loving it. Again, episode 4 dropped today, which is Sunday. So there's 2 weeks left. I won't spoil anything. Please tune in. Again, these things are available on AMC Plus, which we get through Amazon Prime, which is the same thing you can do if you're watching Todd's Invincible. So we're kind of the Amazon Prime plug this week, because that's where you can get that at. But yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. Todd, have you watched the first episode? Have you tuned in?
Not yet. I'm okay with waiting until it wraps up.
Fair, especially with 2 weeks left. Yeah,
because I have, quite honestly, the show is like, I don't hear many people talking about it, so it's not like it's going to be spoiler.
Right.
I am curious if this does well. Is this just going to be then, oh, we're getting more seasons of this, or is this truly like it's telling its story and it's done?
Right. Which is where
are we gonna get the blood out of a rock?
Yeah, or out of the Walker's gnarly rag, which is funny because there are now, because anytime you turn on Prime, there's promos before it, the Daryl Dixon show is getting a second season called The Book of Carol. So Carol is back, which she was famously not in the first season of that because actress Melissa McBride couldn't travel outside of the country, so she couldn't travel and film in France where they shot it. So so that's one that they're squeezing the story on. So yeah, we'll only know when they wrap it up, if they've done a start your engines that you're like, we're gonna keep the franchise going, get ready,
elongate it, always makes everything better.
Yeah, just exactly, going
until just you run out of stories,
keep squeezing. It's worked for every single show that's ever existed. And then secondly, we did go to the cinemas, as we frequently do, and I've been seeing trailers for this one for a while. The American Society of Magical Negroes, have you seen trailers for this one?
I have, yeah. I've seen some reaction to it as well.
We got Justice Smith in this one, and he, genre-wise, he was in, I'm going to say, the Pokemon movie? I'm trying to remember what, and he's been in the Jurassic World.
He was in Pokemon. He's been in a couple of video games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him. He's a likable actor.
And he's a likable actor. He's, you know, late 20s. He's mixed race, which is obviously that plays a part of this film. But and then Detroit native David Alan Grier, who we all, as Gen Xers, we all love him because he was part of In Living Color, which is a sketch show that was on Fox in the early 90s. But it has to do with he is kind of a down on his luck performance artist who deals in yarn. You have to see the movie to understand what that means. But he gets approached by David Alan Grier, who says, "Hey, I've got a job for you," and whisks him away. This is all comes from the trailer, so hopefully I'm not spoiling anything if you're not familiar with it or want to see the movie. Whisks him away to this secret Hogwarts-esque kind of magical thing where he's part of a society of black folk that help white people feel more comfortable by basically pumping them up. And so that becomes, you know, Justice Smith accepts the job and he gets assigned to a social media outlet where he's got to pump up the ego of this, you know, pretty average white guy. And he falls in love with a girl at the same firm who the white guy decides that he wants. And if Justice Smith doesn't help him get the girl, all magical Negroes everywhere lose their powers. And again, this is all covered in the trailer. I thought it was great. There was an incredible monologue at the end where Justice Smith talks about the disparity of, you know, the black-white gap, certainly here in America and probably the world at large. So phenomenally great film. Go see it. That's what I'm going to leave you with. It was absolutely great. It did not make me, it made me feel the appropriate amount of uncomfortable as a white person. It made me feel the uncomfortableness I should feel as a white person.
Correct.
Yeah. And it was, but it was not heavy or violent or preachy in a way that, you know, it had a message, but it didn't feel preachy. Go see this. Like I said, in theaters, I think it dropped this week. Go and support a film like this.
Yeah. It's funny because that whole phrase of magical Negroes is a concept in films.
Yes. And that's exactly.
Did they cover that?
It starts with that is the opening title card. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a black character that comes along to further the white character's journey. That's Magical Negro.
Like Bagger Vance.
That was Magical Negro the movie. Bagger
Vance.
Because he was literally a magical Negro in that film, which I believe. Yeah.
Exactly. Or I'm blanking on the name of the movie, the most famous one, the prison film.
Green Mile.
Morgan Freeman.
Shawshank. Yeah.
But he was even Green Mile, though. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, exactly.
I mean, you see where this ties together. Yeah, all to help the black people. All to help the white people, because we need all the help we can get, folks.
It was great. Filled with a lot of you know, kind of black comedians that I recognize. Yeah. But yeah, go see this. It's definitely, nice. definitely worth your while.
Yeah, well, good. Definitely a smaller film. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that gets us the heck out of the Geek Easy. They spit in our drinks again, Todd, so we're out of here. Don't know why they keep letting us back in, but that's their problem, not ours. I got to get out my Air Qantas app because it's time to get down to the land down under. Hologram Tina and those fantastic mutants are waiting for us to talk about X-Men, the animated series. Let's do it.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Thank you, Tina. The mutants have been gathered for a topic or game to be entertained. And this week, we're doing a little bit of a primer background on X-Men, the animated series.
A little bit of background. Just a coat of primer.
We go. Just before you coat the walls. Essentially, the X-Men 97 is coming out next week. So we thought it'd be a good time to check in on, you know, the series and, you know, just get a feel for it since it's been many years since a lot of us have watched it. But it's all on Disney Plus now.
Right.
And we're going to talk about five specific episodes I will give you the overview of the series. So the series debuted in October 31st, 1992.
Yes,
correct. And it went to September 20th, 1997. At that point I was a junior in high school. I've been a senior because it would have been my senior year fall. So yeah, I was a little bit older when this happened. So, you know, I did watch some of it, but I was busy on Saturday mornings when this was debuting. So I really didn't get a chance to watch it. Then I went to college. So
yeah. So this
I,
was
I didn't a, get a,
This was a literal Saturday morning cartoon a la the Saturday morning cartoons of our youth a decade earlier. So
Correct, on Fox Kids.
Yeah, yep. I know that my, my buddy Derek, who's my figure collecting partner, who I mentioned earlier, this is a big, big show for him because he was that age when this was on. So I think this was a right. Because when it comes to collecting, he does a lot of the X-Men stuff and I don't because he loved the show so much.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, I did watch it because it was the only X-Men thing I could see beyond like Generation X and like and things like
classic.
that were not very good. And we didn't, you know, the X-Men would show up in like a Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And then we got a one episode pilot back in the day in 1989 called Pride of the X-Men, which loosely then the video game of the X-Men beat 'em up arcade game came out. And I liked the Pride of the X-Men quite a bit, but they did some weird things making like Wolverine Australian, didn't make any sense. And Dazzler was in it. So there you go.
X-Men Wolverine is an Australian. That came from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Their one appearance in that. That was the origin of that. Yeah.
Exactly. And they just keep going with it.
Firestar calls Magneto Magneto in that too. Yeah. In a recap. So it's just, not good X-Men representation back in the day.
Yeah. So it essentially got a 13 episode order when they went back a couple years later to finally get this in. Saban Entertainment picked this up. They're also the guys behind Power Rangers. So with that, and the series did really, really well. It basically was recreating Giant Size X-Men with that team and going through multiple storylines through five seasons. And it went for a total of 76 episodes over five seasons.
Yeah.
Like I said, yeah. So, yeah, and it was kind of interesting because the voice talent had some notable voice talent from, you know, past animated series. And they covered a lot of the bases of, you know, modern and old storylines. So as a fan of the X-Men, I appreciated that. Now, the execution, American animation is hit and miss at best. It's usually cheap and doesn't look that good. So we'll get into that pieces, but that's what's known. You know, the show is known for really being a lot of a kids' entryway into the X-Men when they weren't going to the comic shop. So
right.
Yeah. So that is kind of where it's at. It's on Disney Plus, like we said, so you can watch all these episodes. And we're going to now get into, we watched five episodes. So we watched Days of Future Past, which was a two-parter. It was in season one, episode 11 and 12. Then we did Time Fugitive, one and two, which is two-parter again, season two, seven and eight. And then we watched Weapon X Lies in Videotape, season four, episode 16.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Holy cow.
We'll kick it off with Days of Future Past. So Days of Future Past, as you know, it's based on the comic book storyline. But they took some,
Yeah, all your big players were different.
With it.
Yeah, their prime focus character was Bishop more than it was Wolverine.
Yes.
And one thing that I thought was exceptional about Bishop, and I don't know if this was introducing Bishop or if he had appeared in previous episodes. And again, this is only episode 11 of a probably 20 episode season. I think it says, it ran down. This was this was the season finale of the first season. So
there was one episode after.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Because it ran, there were five seasons, 13, 13, 19, 21, and then 10 in the final season, according to this article. So the one thing that I loved about Bishop, whether he's introduced here or not, is that every time he spoke or had a pause, there was this great honky tonk harmonica music. I'm like, that
did not understand. Is he a cowboy?
Because if I was looking down, I would thought, oh, Bishop must be, Gambit must be coming on the screen because he's a Cajun, right? It was, I don't know what Bishop's like regional background was. Was he from the South as well? Is he from Alabama? And that's why that harmonica music makes sense.
I think they're trying to make him like a cowboy.
Oh,
because
he had a kerchief around his neck. I get it. Okay.
He's a mutant hunter. Cause that's the whole thing. You know, Bishop was one of the mutant hunters.
He was Dog the Bounty Hunter. Yeah.
That's why he's got M on his face. And in the comics he was introduced,
Right.
230s, 240s, I think, 250, I think.
Right, and because, this, yeah, because he came from that future and where all mutants had the brand on their face because they'd be like, you're a mutant, psh, and stick it over
your eyeball. Yeah, but he was not part of the original Days of Futures Past.
No, really. Because that was in, that was, I think, 140.
Early 80s.
Very early 80s, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and that is, to me, one of the most iconic print X-Men stories because that's Claremont Byrne. Closer to the midpoint of the 17 year run that Claremont had doing X-Men, but I think certainly one of the finest, and it's the adaptation of that is my favorite X-Men film.
It's iconic.
Yeah it is, but I wouldn't say that this was an iconic adaptation.
Well, I mean, they did change some things up because the whole thing was Bishop then finds out, you know, he's rounding up mutants to earn cash, and then when
gotta catch them all quota, they're like he's, Pokemon.
He basically had done up his quota, and they basically said, and then the Sentinels then say, "Oh, we no longer need you." So they go after Bishop as well. So Bishop, oh my gosh, you guys aren't too bad.
So they do have capped commissions if you're if you're basically a salesman of capturing mutants. He just exceeded all his forecasts, and then he just said, that's a bad thing to happen in sales.
Yeah, you already capped out your bonus, you know, and then we don't need you anymore because, you know, that we've tapped out that region. So then, and then when they go back to the base and they find out, the reason this all happened was because the bad future where all mutants were dead and everything like that is because an assassination happened where the mutants were blamed for it, and then the Sentinel program went forward.
What happens in every adaptation. But when they get to the end of it, they find out that it's like pulling on threads of a tapestry, right? They think, hey, we've solved it. And I'm not jumping. Am I jumping ahead into the next one?
Well, that goes in the next one. But
it goes in the next one. Sorry.
I think before we do that, you know, we should give it a little bit of flavor. The reason why Bishop goes back is because, you know, Wolverine takes them back and Forge is there. They create a time bracelet.
Right.
And so Bishop basically said, hey, old man, you can't do this. He pushes Wolverine out of the way and Bishop goes back. So
of course
it's the flipperoo.
He's the cowboy.
Exactly. So it's funny because when they run in, so Bishop, it's kind of then gets the brain fog. He doesn't know, like, oh, I don't know who does it, and I can't remember anything. And then, of course, you get
like Quantum Leap. Remember how Sam had a Swiss cheese brain and couldn't remember stuff?
Exactly.
Stuff? Yeah.
And they face each other. They finally team up to stop it, and they don't know exactly what's happened. And then we find out, it's secretly Mystique is masquerading as Gambit to kill
Senator Kelly.
So that things happen.
You're making it sound like X-Men Mad Libs. To kill, give me a name. Yes. And then give me a place, and give me a noun and a verb, transitive.
Exactly. And then we get some like weird people. We get like Creighton Creed, which is essentially the dad of Sabretooth, is involved. The Friends of Humanity is an organization wants to take out mutants. So then
Friends of Humanity.
Exactly. So it's kind of crazy that this all happened.
Yeah.
And they solve the mystery. It was Gambit was actually he was actually blamed for the death of Senator Kelly in this, and actually with Mystique gets shown as the shapeshifter, and then story resolved. Bishop goes back and they find out actually it didn't solve anything.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was talking about. So, and it's in this that we, and I don't know if this is previously established, but in the comics, Mystique is actually the mother of Nightcrawler. But in this, she's also the mother of Rogue, or is that a big fake out?
No, that was part of the comics too. Like she raised Rogue, why she was part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and all that. Remember one day she took on the Avengers and got Mystique.
Oh, right. More. Yeah. Right.
Then she became, So, I guess before we go on to the next episode, Charlie, let's comment on a couple of things that were very funny. The fact that they would go out, X-Men would go out in this, like Jubilee kept them breaking your damn CD player. Had to go to the mall. And the funny part about it was when they would go to the mall, everybody in the X-Men team, like Gambit, would just go out in his trench coat and his uniform.
Right, exactly. There's no, yeah, and Jubilee in her, you know, in her yellow. It's funny because Jubilee is April hasn't done it in years, but had the whole Jubilee outfit as a cosplay, and it didn't fit anymore because my wife lost
one of the worst costumes of all time.
But it's just a yellow like schmuck and like those terrible pink like old guy glasses, and then the headphones. And then a disc.
She's Robin Sparkles, Charlie, from
Let's Go to the Mall. Yeah, I love that. It's very much like in Star Wars or in The Simpsons, where anyone only has one outfit. Or in the case of Star Wars, you get one outfit per film. And then animation budget.
Keep that animated. Well, although Storm did get to wear, like, she got to dress up.
Yeah. Every once in a while. You know, and that's it actually, it's furthered because in Star Wars Rebels, anytime you saw one of the Imperial officers, they had the caps pulled down real tight because they didn't want to make faces for every one of the Imperials. So that's the truth. That's the real, that's why all of them basically have kind of, and again, it's a cowboy look, right? You got that brim right over the eye. So they can all look alike. Tisk. So.
Someone recommended these episodes to me. And I don't know if I would have picked these ones again because it was a lot of the same themes. It was like, oh, we're going back to the future again.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. Again. And it was another two-part. So, yeah, in the new, the next one is, it's The Time Fugitive. And now we're into season 2 and 7 and 8. So, again, it's closer to the end of that season. And now we have, I don't know if this is the I was trying to click on these links here to see if this was the first appearance of Cable in the series.
Cable was actually in a previous episode, season. No one remembered him though.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. Yeah, so, exactly. They had, but this had to do with the Legacy Virus, which was a storyline in the late 80s, I think, if I'm not mistaken, in the X-Men.
Correct.
Titles.
Yeah. Colossus, actually his sister died. Lanya died of the Legacy Virus.
Magic,
she was brought back. But yeah, and there was also another techno organic virus that Cable has as well, and that's why he gets sent to the future. So this is kind of a mix of both. But yeah, the virus that was going to kill humans, spread by mutants. It was a ploy by who was it a ploy by, Charlie?
I forgot. Who's it deployed by?
Apocalypse!
Oh, my goodness! You know, you can never tell by the guy's name that he is the original mutant bad guy. Yeah, we didn't really get Magneto anywhere in any of this, which, you know, you think of the X-Men, you think of, you know, well, he's the dude, because he was, he was obviously the original X-Men villain, but...
Well,
nobody...
he's in the first couple of episodes. Like, I watched the first three episodes of the season just to get myself up to speed, and Magneto's involved.
Yeah, I think I did two 5 years ago when Disney Plus came out, and I'm like, no, this is no good. Because the anime, and I was messaging you when I was watching this. I'm like, this animation is this rough, dude. This really, it's very tough to watch.
The quality of like the video too, like the transfer, it's just kind of not good. You know, obviously old video or old animation, it looks muddy in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they can't really crisp it up, so the Legacy Virus, again, that was kind of a misnomer, because in the public, like, oh, the mutants are getting, because every time, oh, this mutant gave me the whatever. And I love how throughout all of these people kept saying, mutants, go back where you came from. And I'm like, where is that? Grand Rapids, yeah, exactly. Because the whole thing about
Island,
Bablo Island. There. Oh, no, actually, it's Zug Island. That's the place where this is what my ex-wife told me. He was a native Detroiter. Zug Island, which is right next to where they're building the new Gordie Howe International Bridge that goes over to Canada, is right in that River Rouge plant manufacturer area. And Zug Island is, she said, that's where all the mutants are. So Zug Island is where mutants come from. There, I just solved it for you. And sorry to any of our listeners who live in Southwest Detroit. I apologize, but that's just what I heard from my ex-wife.
Yeah. So we do have this hysteria, like, and we find out that Creighton Creed, who's trying to, you know, get people against mutants. We find out that he's so against them because his son.
Of course, it's always the son.
Yeah, exactly. So we essentially have Cable is now kind of. It's kind of coming back in, replacing Bishop in this sense, because he goes back in time to stop this from happening because his future sucks. His child Tyler gets sucked away.
Right, just like get just like in Deadpool 2, because, you know, there was Josh Brolin was Cable in that film, and that was his whole driving force. He went back to kill the wildebeest kid. What's that kid's name? Who was the pyro in that movie? The Kiwi kid. He was in some name called the drawing a blank.
Oh yeah.
I know who I'm talking about. Yeah. The prison pocket boy.
Yes. So essentially Cable, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of a silly misunderstanding, because they Cable and Bishop trying to kill each other because they don't want either of their futures to die, and they're at each other's throats. And we are essentially getting a lot of the same story beats of the I always felt like there was footage that was also reused from the previous two-parter.
That's how you can save that money. My goodness.
So I like the solve of this is essentially the legacy virus, which they have to stop, because if they don't, like, it will cause the deaths of like millions and millions of billions of people.
And I do love getting the virus, how you then automatically tear your shirt open so that someone can see the little dits and dots like a tattoo growing on your, but it's not even growing. You just have, when you just, because again, you just pull your shirt open, and they don't show any women doing
it. It's like when somebody draws measles on their body to show that they're sick.
No, I'm sick. I have the shingles. Here, look.
So we do get the solve of this episode was that Cable figured it out. He goes, oh, I know what to do. So we're going to go through all the scenario, replay them taking on Apocalypse. But what they have to do is essentially get Wolverine falling into a vat of the virus so he can fight it off, and then they use the antibodies to
like
save
Joker
everybody.
Or you know, the same way that you're like, oh, did you have COVID-19, now we need to get your blood and blah 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 blah. Fantastic. So
that was the solve, and then Cable goes back to his past and son's there, and Bishop does too. He solved it, and I like that we get hippie Forge, you know, old man Forge.
And Forge's only ability is that he's got a fake leg, and isn't he like super smart? Isn't that basically his?
Oh yeah, he is a he basically can build anything. That is like his ability. So
is not a super great like combat ability, because you know, remember that, and like Cypher, how his mutant ability was languages. I'm like, well, how useless is this dude? Don't even give him a yellow uniform.
Charlie, we've all been hurt by words.
Oh, that's so sad. Oh,
yes, exactly. Yeah, it'll make you cry.
Words hurt. He's going to come up with words and languages that don't even exist.
Yeah, the funny part about this is when either when Cable or Bishop both use their weapons, either they are super powerful or they do nothing. It's like, you know, like little pistols.
Pew, pew, pew. Right.
Exactly. You never know what you're going to get with that weapon.
It's a big pew pew. Watch out. Watch out for the big pew pew. Oh man.
And I liked one of the phrases that Cable used. He teleported through a phone line into a phone booth, and he says, reach out and touch someone. I'm like, who is going to get that reference from like 1982?
That was a bad one.
Reach out and touch someone. It's AT&T.
You could have just said ET phone home, and it would have been more topical. Oh my God.
It's very topical. Yeah.
Or he could have said, and long distance calls are free after 8 p.m. and on weekends.
Yeah, call was at the MCI, call MCI, or the 1-800 call ATT.
Oh my God! We had prepaid calling cards when we were in college. Yep, got to do that so you can make those long distance calls. Kids today don't even have any idea what that. Don't even know anything except
calls are free, Charlie. Phone calls are free.
I was going to say the area codes are irrelevant. You know there's no such thing as a 7-digit phone number. But anyway, listen to this old guy's going on. All right, last installment. I did actually pull up a summary, which is Haves here. So yes, the last one is Weapon X Lies and Videotape Based. And what a weird reference, because that was like an film from the 80s called Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
I like the title. Yeah.
I think Laura San Giacomo was in that, and she was the star of the Just Shoot Me. That's all I know her from. Oh, and she was Julia Roberts' fellow prostitute friend in Pretty Woman. There you go. That's her resume.
Yay.
But this episode loosely based on the storylines, the Shiva Scenario Part 1, Dreams of Gore, Phase 1/ Part 2, Dreams of Gore Face. Okay, oh my, oh, this seems really... Oh, from Wolverine issues 48 to 50. Yeah. From, which were written by Larry Hama and marked by an art by Mark Silvestri. So two super great creators. Yep. Larry Hama, I'm a huge fan of. He's the guy who created G.I. Joe, Real American Hero. There was also a bit of the storylines from Nightmare Quest Reunion, Bastions of Glory, and What Goes Around from issue 61 through 64 thrown in. So this was really just all Wolverine. The robot Talos is called Shiva here, and Weapon X Project has more members. These issues were written by Larry Hama, art by Mark Textiera. Well, so nice pedigree from the obviously from the source material, but Hoser Hollywood. I love your breakdown. Yeah. This was the only standalone episode we watched. And like you said, the previous two were basically the same story twice.
It's kind of like, going back and forth through history, you're never going to change anything. So
yeah, exactly.
Butterfly effect happens. This one was kind of cool. It was Wolverine's old team Weapon X from Canada, where, you know, that's where Wolverine was given his enhancements. There was a team of Sabretooth, Maverick.
Tom Cruise.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Maverick was like German, I think. So he had kind of a weird accent, and Silver Fox was his girlfriend. At the time.
And that was the big image. I remember when he drove away in the end, there was a tree that had bit and it was gigantic, was written Logan plus Silver Fox, which Silver is weird because Logan is his name, but it wasn't her name, Kayla Silver Fox. Cause that was part of the X-Men Origins film, which we're going to be talking about in a future Thunderdome as we ramp up to Deadpool. That was the female lead in the X-Men Origins film. So I thought same character, correct. Right? Yeah, there you go.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Same character, but this one actually was a superhero or a team. She had the ability to heal and not age.
And her mutant ability in that movie was she could make somebody do what they say as long as she was touching them. Like, I think you should pee in that snowbank. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But hold on to me while I'm doing it.
Yeah, Maverick had the ability of absorb like weapon blasts and things like that.
How does that make him a Maverick? I'm a Maverick. Shoot me. Yeah, I don't
get
it.
He shoots things. Yeah. Well, Maverick was the old TV show, and it was also a
it's a movie. Your boy. From the Rockford Files, your dad's favorite show. James, what's his ass? The old guy.
Yep.
Because it was young and then Mel Gibson was the guy.
From Rockford Files, James Gardner. So this is essentially, this is all covering Weapon X, which, you know, that originally we found out Wolverine's origin story, where he essentially was a mutant, experimented on, injected with adamantium, and then snuck away, and basically Alpha Flight found him.
Alpha Flight, good stuff. Yeah. Yes.
And they basically basically turned him back into a man. But there was adventures with Weapon X where he was captured with the team. They went on missions together, similar to X-Men Origins, as we saw. Uh-huh, and this is getting the team back together because they're all experiencing horrible flashbacks and memories. It's incapacitating them. Wolverine's out of control. So Wolverine decides to go back where all of this happened.
The Alkali Lake or whatever. That's what exactly. Called them. Yeah.
Yeah. But Beast follows him and helps him out through this. And essentially find out that all of their memories are implanted, that none of these things ever happened. We find out Sabretooth, we get to go back to his dad. Was it Hezekiah Creed?
The names just get worse the further back they go. Like, and Creed, with arms wide open. He was Amish. Amish Wolverine. Schnicked.
And he was going to kill him with a pitchfork because he was bad. His son was the devil. And
They sent him out on that Rumshkaya, and he never came back. Joined the Canadian circus.
And Wolverine, you know, had a relationship with Silver Fox up in a cabin.
Just like in the movie.
It was all a lie. And then, I forgot what Mavericks was. I can't remember that.
He was just absorbing stuff and going highway to the danger zone. Oh, wrong.
Maverick. I did look up more about Maverick because I couldn't remember. Man, not exactly a great ending to that dude's story. Kind of sad.
Did he have one rock and roll too many?
Pretty much. Yeah. Oh. Kind of a a forgettable character. But yeah, so essentially we get all of these, all of the team kind of team up again. They take on this robot, which is...
Robot.
Not exactly. It kind of looked like Silver Samurai.
Ah, come on. All the, that's how they made all these movies. They pulled everything from this show. That's all the source material. And then did Wolverine lose his claws and then they were bone claws or one side?
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So, and then when they look at the, you know, the where they're at this this facility, and essentially they'd recreated almost like Truman Show, like where they're had, and Wolverine calls it Hoser Hollywood.
I love it. All right.
Yeah, because they're Canadian. Stuff.
Yeah, I get it. Because and all, that's what all. Wow. We've known Mark for several years, and he's never said hoser. So I think
he never has. He never talked about wearing a toque.
Yeah. You know? I think maybe a lot of it is just it's a lot of cultural bias.
Never seen him eat poutine on the show.
Open your mind. Open your mind. Don't listen to stereotypes. Well, so that's so we're getting X-Men 97 in that's this week that this is what we're dropping on Tuesday. Correct. And doesn't that come out on Wednesday? Yeah, exactly. So, well, good deal. And is it relevant maybe to direct our listeners to watch like the last couple of episodes of maybe the series?
Well, it's a direct continuation. So, yeah, I would say if you want to see where this ended, you know, probably watch the last episode at least to see, you know, where it stood, where the character's at. Because, yeah, this is not like a remake, a reboot, or like a 10 years later. This is essentially picking up right after that last episode. Right.
Yeah. So if you look at... yeah, I was looking to see if there's a summary of the last episode. Let's see here. Just for the name of the last episode is Graduation Day, which aired in 1997. I'll give a quick summary. At a mutant human relations summit, Henry Peter Gyrich, oh, he's always such a bad guy, attacks and cripples Professor X with an energy weapon. The X-Men and Moira McTaggart try to save him, but all seems lost. Lalandra comes and has a cure, but Professor X must go with her to the Shi'ar Empire. So this is right from the comics. I recognize all this. Meanwhile, Magneto makes a final preparations to take over the world with his mutant army, but on the eve of the invasion, Cyclops, Wolverine, and Jean Grey infiltrate Geonosia. Man, they're packing all of it in this episode.
Yeah.
To tell Magneto that Xavier is dying, he halts the assault on humankind out of respect for his greatest enemy, equal and only friend. The final scene of the show depicts a lasting monument as all the X-Men and Magneto stand outside the X-Men mansion and say goodbye to Xavier as he leaves with Lalandra and her ship to the Shi'ar homeworld. So he doesn't die per se, but the trailers that we saw made it look like he was dead. So it's a fake out, like he goes to space.
Oh, Charlie, you know everybody who dies in comics stays dead.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Right. Exactly correct. So he is Poochie. Yeah. He had to return to his home planet.
Exactly. Kind of like that. I will say that I shared the most recent trailer for X-Men 97.
Yeah.
And definitely I can say the animation is significantly better.
Head and shoulders.
Looks really good.
Yeah, head and shoulders. Very good stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. So do we know, are we getting a straight up drop or is this a weekly deal? I can't remember.
I believe it's a weekly deal and it's 8 to 10 episodes, and they talked about what they're going to cover, and there's going to be some cool stories they're going to cover, and I'm assuming that they're going to adapt some of the more modern storylines, even though maybe it was 97 then. They can capture other things.
Maybe they'll get the Hellfire and the Krakoa, some of the stuff that we were talking about.
Extinction Agenda, they could do Death of the Mutants, they could do
Fall of the Mutants,
Age of Apocalypse,
Age of Apocalypse. Well, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it. So this was a fun walk down memory lane for memories that I never had because I never watched this show. So, but I'm more excited for the new one. So, good deal. All right. Well, that is a wrap on the program. So, friends, as always, thank you for joining us. Todd, where do people find you out there?
They can find me on Twitter at TOxtra, also and Threads, and at Secret Friends Unite on Threads at Secret Friends U on Twitter.
You got all that? I am C3 Carpenter on Threads and Instagram. I stay busy on our Secret Friends Discord. That is the friendliest corner of Discord, I've decided. That's what I decided to call it. But I spend a decent amount of my time running the USS Grand Petoskey with my wife, April. That is one of the biggest chapters of the International Star Trek Fan Club in the world. We are based here in West Michigan, but we've got chapters all over Michigan. I'm also very privileged to run Region 13, which encompasses Michigan and Eastern Canada. If you're a Trekker within the sound of my voice, please visit sfi.org, drop us a note, or ussgrantpetoskey.com. I would love to help connect you with Trekkers where you are. So with that, friends, one more time, thank you for joining us. I'm going to tell you that sharing is caring, and to keep on trucking.
Be the hero, not the villain.
In a truck.
Back off, rookie.
This podcast is part of the Secret Friends Unite podcasting network. Visit secretfriendsunite.com for more great shows, articles, news, reviews, and more. Secret Friends Unite podcasts are available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and other podcast services around the world. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can join us on Facebook or our new Discord server, or follow at Secret Friends U on Twitter. Please subscribe to Secret Friends Unite on YouTube and visit our merch store at tpublic.com. Just search Secret Friends Unite. Thanks for listening.